Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today we'll have some news for you about a lawsuit filed against the state of California over delays in approving Medi-Cal applications. You'll also hear why some local agencies are returning their surplus military gear and learn about a voter registration drive to reverse San Diego's low turnout rates. We'll tell you about the president's crackdown on corporate tax dodgers and about some upgrades in San Diego's firefighting capabilities. Plus, we'll have more details on the man who wants to turn the UT San Diego newspaper into a nonprofit media outlet, hear about a new app to help the blind, and concerns about enterovirus cases confirmed here in San Diego. You'll learn about a lunar eclipse coming up, and in our Green Scene report, some hopeful signs for monarch butterflies. We'll also have a warning about a scam involving promises of cheap utility rates. In our second half hour, hear from Public News Service with some national news headlines in the public interest. And then we'll take you to Joan Embry's ranch in Lakeside, the San Diego Zoo ambassador, for some wild times to benefit Project Wildlife. Also learn where to dispose of unwanted prescription medications at this Saturday's National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day sites around the county. And on Destination East County, we'll share the top festivals and events taking place this weekend and next, from Oktoberfests to a fiesta celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month. All this and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
Tuesday, September 23rd was National Voter Registration Day and marked 6 weeks until the November election. On the heels of the lowest voter participation ever in the city, Alliance San Diego has announced it is launching Vote for San Diego, a major nonpartisan voter mobilization effort aimed at increasing turnout among infrequent voters. The campaign intends to appeal to all community members to strengthen participation in our democracy, including Vote for San Diego posters, lawn signs, and stickers, as dozens of canvassers prepared to distribute materials to voters across our region. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health report. A lawsuit has been filed in California alleging that a huge backlog in processing Medicaid applications has caused suffering to low-income patients who are unable to get health care as a result. The backlog occurred after the expansion of Medi-Cal, California's version of Medicaid, under federal health care reforms, when over 1 million residents signed up for the Obamacare options. Many were previously uninsured and ineligible. But as of May, the suit contends, over 900,000 of those applications, that's almost 1 million, had still not been reviewed, leaving applicants in limbo. The backlog did drop by nearly two-thirds to 350,000 after the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the federal government, sent a letter to California and five other states that had dragged their feet on getting applicants approved. The letter told them to come up with a plan to trim their backlogs. But the lawsuit filed by Health Access Advocates argues that even this backlog violates state law, which requires that all Medi-Cal applicants be informed of their eligibility status within 45 days after applying. Some Californians have now been waiting over 8 months, the suit charges. This situation happened to one of East County Magazine's own writers, who was left without Medi-Cal coverage for months even after undergoing open-heart surgery while his application was pending. Adding to the stress of his post-surgical recovery, he had to contend with notices of unpaid bills from the hospital and doctors, bills that Medi-Cal should have covered, and eventually did, but only months later. But some patients have avoided seeking treatment, waiting for their coverage to kick in. The lawsuit cites the tragic case of Robert Rivera, who was sent a notice that his Medi-Cal application had finally been approved in California 6 months after he applied. Unfortunately, the approval arrived 2 months after Mr. Rivera had died of a pulmonary embolism while still uninsured. He also had suffered from heart problems and gallstones. The lawsuit states, by definition, Medi-Cal applicants are among California's poorest residents and have no alternate means to pay for treatment for urgent critical health care needs. Many of the applicants in this Medi-Cal backlog are sick or have serious chronic health conditions and urgently need medical care or prescription medications, the suit continues. It also suggests that the state has failed to notify applicants that they have a right to be granted Medi-Cal early in certain circumstances and to seek care even before their insurance card arrives in the mail. Attorney Lucy Quasanella, in a statement issued to the media, says the 350,000 people left in limbo need help now. These are real people and they are suffering, she declares. The state has decided it's okay to leave them in limbo, allowing their health to deteriorate as they wait desperately for word about their Medi-Cal applications. She adds, it's not okay. It's illegal.
The Obama administration has taken steps to halt companies from moving their headquarters overseas to avoid paying taxes in the U.S. A statement issued by the Treasury Department reads, quote, companies are increasingly using the technique of inversion, whereby a U.S.-based multinational restructures so that the U.S. parent is replaced by a foreign corporation in order to avoid U.S. taxes. These transactions erode the U.S. tax base unfairly, placing a larger burden on all other taxpayers, including small businesses and hardworking Americans, unquote. This week, the Treasury Department issued new rules on corporate inversions that will restrict American multinationals' ability to access money earned by their foreign subsidiaries unless they pay their taxes here. It also makes it harder for such moves to occur in the future, requiring that new multinationals that are American-based must own less than 80% of the new multinational. The deal is not retroactive, applying only to future cases. The move comes after several high-profile companies such as Burger King took heat for shifting their operations abroad in order to dodge taxes. President Obama says he has taken steps where he can protect the progress the American people have worked so hard to bring about. He added, quote, there's no substitute for congressional action, unquote. Congressman Sander Levin, a Democrat, has co-authored a bill that would further restrict this practice. He chided his colleagues, stating, quote, the administration is taking important and necessary steps to stem the tide of inversions in the wake of Republicans' refusal to act, unquote. But Michael Steele, spokesman for Speaker John Boehner, leader of the House Republicans, claimed companies are leaving the U.S. because of high tax rates. He says, quote, the answer is to simplify and reform our broken tax code to bring jobs home. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on surplus military gear owned by local agencies. Recently, we reported on the San Diego Unified School District's decision to return an armored vehicle that it had received through the Department of Defense's Excess Property Program. Now, it seems that may be the start of a trend. UT San Diego reports that local agencies received $2.9 million worth of equipment through the program since 2006. But now, at least three other agencies want to return gear that they received as well. San Diego Police Department seeks to return its Peacekeeper. That's an armored truck that Lieutenant Kevin Mayer says does not stop most high-powered rounds of ammunition. There's a catch, though, to returning it. The department first has to find a military base or another agency willing to accept the aging vehicle, which cost $5,000 last year in repairs just for San Diego Police to keep it running. El Cajon's police department wants to send back assault rifles that have been used mainly for training officers. But the guns are now shelved in an armory, and they aren't worth the lengthy auditing process required each year to keep them, Lieutenant Mike Moulton told the UT. Similarly, National City's police department wants to ship back its battle rifles, too. Not all of the items are military in nature. Cleveland National Forest got cold weather gear and long underwear through the program. The forestry agency, along with the Border Patrol, got the bulk of surplus gear locally, including a few items that have raised questions, such as whether immigration and customs officials really need 72 bayonet knives. Agencies in some other parts of the country have converted military vehicles to haul water to fight fires and other non-law enforcement uses, so they can be useful tools in their portfolio. The biggest question, however, is whether militarizing police departments could lead to misuse of force complaints, such as those that occurred in Ferguson, Missouri, where police used military gear to control crowds of protesters after the shooting of an unarmed teenager by a police officer.
The County News Service reports that four children at Rady Children's Hospital have been confirmed by state and county health officials as California's first cases of enterovirus D68. Patients range from age 2 to 13. All are recovering from the serious respiratory illness, according to the San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency. Samples of additional local patients are now undergoing testing. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, states, We are monitoring this closely with our local health care providers. She adds that overall, respiratory illnesses have not increased significantly countywide. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports that the illness has caused severe respiratory illness in at least 16 states in the past month. Most of the illnesses were diagnosed in young children, many with a history of asthma. Dr. John Bradley, pediatric infectious disease expert at Rady Children's Hospital, said the hospital started seeing a steady rise in the number of children coming in with respiratory conditions in mid-August, and the numbers continued to increase. But he assured that most children in enterovirus D68 or EVD68 has symptoms similar to a common cold, so a trip to the emergency department is generally not necessary unless the child has difficulty breathing or an unusually high fever. Some enterovirus infections, however, can be serious and lead to respiratory illness requiring hospitalization. Neurologic illnesses such as aseptic meningitis, which is swelling of the tissue covering the brain and spinal cord, and encephalitis, swelling of the brain, can result. Infants, children, and teenagers are most likely to get infected with enteroviruses. The strain is an unusual variety of enterovirus, not commonly seen until recently. There is no treatment except management of symptoms. Thus, preventing spread of the illness is key to limiting its spread. Most enterovirus infections in the United States occur seasonally during the summer and fall. County health officials recommend taking measures similar to trying to avoid the flu, like washing hands often with soap and water for 20 seconds, especially after changing diapers. Avoid touching eyes, nose, and mouth with unwashed hands. Don't hug, kiss, or share cups or eating utensils with people who are sick, and disinfect frequently touched surfaces such as toys and doorknobs, especially if someone is sick. This has been Leon Thompson with the Health Report on East County Magazine.
As we enter the peak of fire season, county supervisors on Tuesday approved several upgrades to our regional firefighting system. These include acquisition of a third firefighting helicopter, pre-positioned ground fire crews during red flag conditions, and contracting for night flying operations. The steps are aimed at boosting the region's wildfire resources going into what is expected to be a highly dangerous peak wildfire season. The new permanent helicopter is expected to arrive next year, but the county has already leased a third helicopter until the end of October. Chairwoman Diane Jacobs said the county has allocated $285 million since the Cedar Fire for upgrades. She states, quote, "We are better prepared today than we've ever been before, and we continue to make improvements," unquote. The wildfires that struck this past May served as a reminder of the region's year-round fire danger as well as this year's dire conditions due to drought. County News Service reports that after the wildfires, county officials took steps to enhance emergency planning and firefighting resources, much of them listed as recommendations in the county's May Wildfires After Action Report. Some also came out of meetings the county held with other elected officials, fire chiefs, tribal nations, and military representatives to brainstorm fire preparation. Among those actions, the county also launched the Get Fired Up San Diego Wildfire Preparedness Campaign to urge residents to prepare for potential wildfires. They use a system of ready, set, go. Get ready with defensible space. Get set with an emergency plan, and if the fire risk is near, prepack your car to go. In other emergency-related matters, supervisors also voted to work with San Diego State University on a $1 million research project to develop new social media tracking tools for use during a disaster. The software developed by SDSU is intended to better identify social media trends, topics, and influential messages during emergencies. In addition, the county supervisors voted to adopt the Office of Emergency Services Operational Area Emergency Operations Plan, detailing the major functions in a disaster response. The plan is updated every 4 years. This year, the plan was revised to include considerations for people with physical, learning, or emotional disabilities. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
UT San Diego, our region's largest newspaper, may soon become a nonprofit media outlet. The UT confirmed on Tuesday that developer and philanthropist Malin Burnham, along with a group of donors, are putting together an offer that would transfer ownership of the UT to what has been described as a, quote, public-spirited nonprofit. The UT reports that current owner and publisher Doug Manchester is considering the concept. Under the plan, profits would flow not to shareholders or owners, but instead be used for community projects, although those projects have not yet been described. The newspaper's editorial policy as a nonprofit would be, quote, inclusive and community-focused, unquote, the report states. Manchester has drawn criticism in journalism circles, including a blistering piece in Editor and Publisher for his policies of openly promoting conservative candidates and causes. Now, while the paper's longtime owners, the Copley family, also had conservative leanings, Manchester carried that to a new level, not only on his editorial pages, which many newspapers will do, but even wrapping the front page in an editorial for a prominent Republican candidate. Burnham told Voice of San Diego that Manchester has encouraged him to apply for nonprofit status with the Internal Revenue Service, or IRS, and that's a sign that Manchester may be taking the offer seriously. Manchester has likely grown disillusioned that the newspaper has floundered financially and failed to have the political impact he envisioned. After all candidates endorsed by the newspaper in the last general election failed to win office. So who is Malin Burnham? He's chaired John Burnham & Company Insurance and Burnham Real Estate, and he's known as a major downtown developer. At 86 years old, he's a driving force in many local causes still. According to his bio at the UC San Diego Foundation, he has chaired 9 major nonprofits and founded 14 different organizations. He has also funded many philanthropic causes and has been a key player in the San Diego Foundation, the Midway Museum, and the Sanford Burnham Medical Research Institute locally. He's also a sports fan, former co-owner of the Padres, and a sailor who once won an international sailing competition. He helped bring the America's Cup yacht race to San Diego, as well as the Olympic Training Center. As for his politics, Burnham has backed Republican candidates, including Mitt Romney's presidential bid as well, but he's been described as a moderate, Voice of San Diego reports. Most recently, Burnham backed Nathan Fletcher's mayoral campaign after Fletcher changed his party affiliation from Republican to Democrat and then ran in the nonpartisan mayoral race. But if the deal to turn the UT nonprofit goes through, readers may see a more restrained approach to politics, since federal regulations prohibit nonprofit media from endorsing political candidates. Until more details are released, it's difficult to assess how significant the shift might be. Burnham, like Manchester, is both a developer and a Republican with deep financial roots in politics, albeit with a long history of also supporting important community causes. In an era when many major newspapers have folded or consolidated as more readers search out news online, however, a nonprofit model could bring stability to the UT and potentially offer more public-oriented editorial policies and news coverage. 10 News reports that Burnham himself has stated that the UT could be a model for community newspapers across the country. The would-be media mogul added, "There are a lot of challenges facing newspapers these days."
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Before sunrise on Wednesday, October 8th, the bright full moon over North America will turn a celestial red. It's a lunar eclipse visible from all parts of the USA. NASA eclipse expert Fred Espenak says, quote, "It promises to be a stunning sight, even from the most light-polluted cities," unquote. West Coast observers will have the best view. The moon will be high in the sky for the total eclipse between 3:25 a.m. and 4:24 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. During a lunar eclipse, the moon passes deep inside the shadow of our planet, a location that bathes the face of the moon in a coppery light. A quick trip to the moon explains the color. Imagine yourself standing on a dusty lunar plain looking up at the sky. Overhead hangs Earth, night side down, completely hiding the sun behind it. The eclipse is underway. You might expect Earth seen in this way to be utterly dark, but it's not. The rim of the planet appears to be on fire. As you scan your eye around Earth's circumference, you're seeing every sunrise and every sunset in the world, all of them at once. This incredible light beams into the heart of the Earth's shadow, filling it with a coppery glow and transforming the moon into a great red orb. However, red is not the only color. Many observers of lunar eclipses also report seeing a band of turquoise. The source of the turquoise is ozone. Atmospheric scientist Richard Keene at the University of Colorado explains, quote, "During a lunar eclipse, most of the light illuminating the moon passes through the stratosphere, where it is reddened by scattering. However, light passing through the upper stratosphere penetrates the ozone layer, which absorbs red light and actually makes the passing light ray bluer. This can be seen, he says, as a soft blue fringe around the red core of the Earth's shadow. To catch the turquoise on October 8th, look during the first and last minutes of totality. The turquoise rim is best seen in binoculars or a small telescope. Espinac notes that the total lunar eclipse of October 8th is the second of four consecutive total lunar eclipses. Such a set of total eclipses is known as a tetrad. The next eclipse in the tetrad is 6 months from now in April 2015. But no need to wait that long. Mark your calendar for October 8th. Wake up early and enjoy the show. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barena.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report on East County Magazine. Earlier this year, we reported on a 90% decline in the number of monarch butterflies in their annual winter migration to Mexico. But now there are signs of hope on the horizon. In St. Louis, weather forecasters were baffled at first by a strange cloud that turned up on radar moving across the city. It turned out to be an enormous flock of monarch butterflies, presumably migrating south towards Mexico. Associated Press reports that Luis Fueyo, the head of Mexico's nature reserve, says that butterflies are arriving early this year in the northern borders of Mexico, where in the past, acres of trees have been turned orange from the fluttering flocks. Most normally arrive in October from the United States and Canada to spend the winter in the mountaintop forests of Mexico. A count won't be made until December or so, but experts are hopeful that a pact between Mexico, Canada, and the United States to help save monarch butterflies will be in place before then. That plan includes creation of milkweed corridors along the entire three-nation migration route. Milkweed is the only plant on which monarch butterflies lay their eggs. In recent months, organizations across America have been educating the public about these threats to the survival of the beautiful orange monarch butterflies, and many groups have begun giving away packets of milkweed seeds. Perhaps all those people planting milkweed will help the butterflies to make a difference, as the butterflies take wing on their annual and amazing tri-continent migration.
I'm John Mattis, investigative guide, host of Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers, shining a light on shady deals all around us.
John Mattis has won 7 Emmy Awards, a Golden Mike, and the Edward R. Murrow Award for exposing fraud and corruption. Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers is produced by the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Ed Barena, guest hosting Scammers, Schemers, and Swindlers on the East County Magazine Show. Residents in El Cajon and City Heights have been approached by representatives of a company called Spark Energy, claiming to be selling a discount natural gas service plan. This is a scam, said Chris Williams, who posted a warning about the company in an email to members of the San Diego Refugee Forum. Williams, whose clients are among the victims, also said, quote, "Unfortunately, quite a few people seem to have signed up already." Williams provided a link on Yelp, where the company has a string of negative reviews. People who signed up for Spark Energy report that the Texas-based company touted low rates, but then gouged customers with high utility bills, often double or more what the customers have been paying before signing up. The company has also apparently ignored repeated requests from people trying to cancel the service.
San Diego State University's Rock the Vote campaign officially launched this week and will continue through Election Day on November 4th. To kick off the campaign on September 23rd, Associated students hosted a barbecue on campus with live music, free food, and voter registration tables. Students can also register to vote online at sdsu.edu/rockthevote. The last day for you to register is October 20th. To register to vote in California, you must be a United States citizen, a resident of California, 18 years of age or older on Election Day, and not in prison or in county jail. Jacqueline Karslowski, Vice President of External Relations for the Associated Students at SDSU, says the Rock the Vote campaign is important because students have a powerful voice. We have the ability to create positive change in our city and state if we play an active role in this election. She states, adding, "The purpose of this campaign is to create more awareness about our upcoming state elections and let students know that we, as students, can make a difference." On November 4th, there will be a poll site in the Student Union for students and staff, faculty, and community members to cast their votes. The campus polling site will be the largest in San Diego County. Karzalewski says students should exercise their right to vote and help shape California's future. Plus, she adds, students need to hold our legislatures accountable and make higher education a priority.
This is Ed Barreno with East County Magazine's Health Report. Imagine being blind and having a device that can take photos of text on ordinary items, such as menus, ballots, store signs, or classroom materials, and then read it to you out loud. It sounds like science fiction, but a brand new app for Apple's iPhones can do just that. It can also convert the text to Braille. Reuters reports that the app is drawing rave reviews after its debut this week. It's being hailed as a life-changer for the blind, the result of a partnership between the National Federation of the Blind and Ray Kurzweil, a senior Google employee and artificial intelligence scientist. Though currently only available for iPhone users, the app will soon be available for Android phones as well. Next up, Kurzweil says he may also create a version of the app for Google eyeglass frames that may soon be able to take photos, record video, and playback sounds for the blind. The first version of Kurzweil's reading machine was as big as a washing machine and cost $50,000. Today's new smartphone app costs just $99, and it can translate in several different languages, all at near lightning speed.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, and next up, we bring you some national news from the Public News Service, which is news in the public interest.
Welcome to the Public News Service daily newscast for Friday, September the 26th, 2014. I'm Mike Clifford. Among the stories featured on our Friday rundown, Attorney General Eric Holder is stepping down, and President Obama praises his tenure. School bullying, now there's an app for that. And a look at why most Western voters oppose state control of public lands. Now our top story, President Obama accepted the resignation of Attorney General Eric Holder Thursday. Obama noted that Holder tackled difficult issues like sentencing disparities, which the president said helped to ensure that America's criminal justice system remains the best in the world.
Since I took office, the overall crime rate and the overall incarceration rate have gone down by about 10%. That's the first time that they've declined together in more than 40 years.
The attention now is focused on finding a successor. Holder has pledged to stay in the job until a new attorney general is confirmed. A new school safety initiative just launched in Michigan. It's encouraging students, parents, and community members to share anonymously any kind of threatening behavior. The system is called OK, the number 2, Say. Mona Shan fills us in on what that number and string of letters actually means.
Kevin Epling of East Lansing lost his eighth grade son to suicide after being bullied by upperclassmen in 2002 and is now the national co-director of Bully Police USA. For preventing bullying, Epling says students are the first line of defense, and OK to Say meets them where they are.
So now making this an app, a web form, text, things that they do all the time, hopefully we can kind of start breaking down the barrier that they think there is of telling people by putting it through technology means.
OK2Say allows users to submit anonymous tips about potential harm or criminal activity by phone, text, email, mobile app, or on its website. The information is then reported to the school and local law enforcement. More information is at michigan.gov/OK2Say.
Advocates say no piece of technology alone can prevent tragedy. It all comes down, they say, to communication. And these days, it may not be enough to make a good product and practice a solid business strategy. Consumers, it turns out, want their companies to be good for people and the planet, too. Stephanie Carson gives us some perspective from the Sunshine State.
A Nielsen survey found that 55% of consumers are willing to pay more for products and services from companies committed to social responsibility. Kevin Paul Scott, owner of the brand consulting firm Addo Worldwide, explains there are demographic considerations, too.
Especially as you look at a younger audience, the millennial age group, they are choosing companies to do business with the way that previous generations chose charities.
There are ways you can judge a company on its corporate citizenship. Among them, look to see if it is certified as a B Corp or benefit corporation. That's a designation that assures consumers a company maintains corporate accountability. There are 450 certified benefit corporations in the world, including 7 in Florida.
This year, Governor Rick Scott signed a bill into law that recognizes benefit corporations in the state of Florida. The short-notice reinstatement of Wisconsin's voter ID law has created some problems. Tim Morrissey reports that's according to a nonpartisan election observer.
The recent decision by a federal appeals court that cleared the way to reinstate Wisconsin's voter ID law for the November election may create unforeseen problems. According to Milwaukee attorney Ann Jacobs, a member of the Legal Coordinating Committee for Wisconsin Election Protection, Jacobs says voter ID addresses what some see as a non-existent problem. She points out Wisconsin had the second highest voter turnout in the nation in 2012 and says the way to protect the elections is to ensure that every eligible voter who wants to vote gets to cast a ballot.
We should be trying to expand our franchise, not enacting legislation that limits it. And every time we put another layer, another burden, another obligation on the voter, we make it harder to exercise that franchise.
Those who support the state's voter ID law say it will help protect the integrity of the voting process. Jacobs says the only issue voter ID addresses is voter impersonation, someone claiming to be someone else, which she says hasn't been a problem either in Wisconsin or the nation as a whole. I'm Tim Morrissey reporting.
The latest census data indicates poverty is on the decrease nationwide for the first time since 2006. In Ohio, the number now sits at 16% for the year 2013. Sandy Oxley with Voices for Ohio's Children says the problem could be combated with new money available to school districts that would provide breakfast and lunches to all students.
We could certainly be providing breakfast and lunch for all of our students and entire school districts and really have that impact on the academic outcomes.
And finally, the majority of Nevadans and people throughout much of the West oppose states taking control of federally managed public lands. Troy Wild has more on the numbers.
David Von Sagern with the Sierra Club in Nevada says he's not surprised that 59% of those surveyed oppose states taking over public lands.
They do want to keep them public. They value them as lands mostly for recreation and conservation rather than being disposed and used for resource extraction and grazing.
Von Segren says he believes the poll is important because it counters a growing movement in some states to gain control of public lands. He points out that Utah passed a law demanding that the federal government cede control of public lands to the state. Von Segren says the poll also shows that 9 out of 10 voters view protecting and conserving public lands as their top priority for the lands. It also shows majority support among both political parties and in both urban and rural areas for the federal government to continue to manage the public lands.
That telephone survey included 1,600 registered voters in Nevada and about a half dozen other western states. I'll be back tomorrow with our weekend update. Until then, Mike Clifford for Public News Service,
member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with a special report about a wild night at Project Wildlife's We Like It Wild benefit event held earlier this month in Lakeside at the Pillsbury Ranch, which is owned by Joan Embry, the San Diego Zoo's ambassador. At the event, guests mixed and mingled with wildlife, getting up-close and personal looks at an Andean condor, a kangaroo, a porcupine, snakes, exotic birds, and more. They also had an opportunity to see some local wildlife, from rescued opossums to owls. Project Wildlife Executive Director Beth Ugaretz announced that the local nonprofit group dedicated to rescuing and rehabilitating injured local wildlife is planning to merge with the San Diego Humane Society to expand its resources and help more wildlife in need.
To consider expanding our reach, providing more opportunities to help the animals we care so much about, we need and appreciate your support more than ever. With our drought in its third year, and development in San Diego County continuing to encroach on habitats, we do need your help.
They agree.
Absolutely, yeah. We love our donors, and we're so grateful for the support that allows us to take orphan babies and raise them for release as healthy wild adults, and to take injured and sick adults and give them a chance to heal.
Then she introduced Gary Weitzman, president of the San Diego Humane Society and Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals.
Project Wildlife is incredibly important to the Humane Society, has been for years and years. As a matter of fact, many of you probably know this, Project Wildlife is actually at the site of our original shelter on Sherman Street and has been probably for 15 years now. So the conversation about joining together is not a new one. It's been actually going on for a number of years, but we obviously got very serious about it this year, as Beth just said. But I just want to tell you that how important the wildlife program is going to be to the Humane Society. We've, for the last year, been talking about the responsibility we feel at San Diego Humane to be the stewards of animal welfare in San Diego County. And that's of all animals, not just dogs and cats. Wildlife is massively, massively important. I remember when I was a little boy, before I even thought about going to vet school, I probably tormented my parents no end by bringing every single hurt bird and pigeon back to the house, and then from there back to our local vet, who couldn't take care of it, because we know how specialized the care for these animals is. And that's why this partnership with Project Wildlife is so important to me and so important to the Humane Society. We want to take care of this organization, have it retain its identity. I just got through a conversation about that. Have it grow stronger and stronger every year. And I promise you, sustain this group so that they continue to be the unbelievable saviors of those least cared for animals in our community, which is, by the way, one of the most biodiverse communities in the United States. But I can tell you that we are pledged to take care of Project Wildlife so that all it does is grow better and bigger and stronger. And that's what Beth and I are planning to do in the next month, to get that so that we can do this by November 1st.
Project Wildlife's director gave an emotional example of tragedies that Project Wildlife volunteers confront and the efforts to which they will go to help save wildlife in need.
Rudy was an infant raccoon when he came to us. A passerby driving to work witnessed a truck run over Rudy's mother, stop, turn around, come back, and run over all her babies. He stopped, and in tears because of the horrible cruelty he had witnessed, but he found that one tiny baby had been spared. And he rushed that baby to us, and that was Rudy. When we got Rudy, we warmed him, fed him neonatal raccoon diet, and began the process of socializing him with other raccoons. He was brought along with medical attention and a focus on helping him to learn and to exhibit the behaviors he would need to have to survive in the wild. After 8 months with us, he was able to be released in a wild area that would meet his needs. This is hard work that our volunteers and staff do and can be very emotionally difficult, but the rewards are enormous. Personally, for the thousands of animals we're able to save, and to our San Diego wild ecosystems.
Joan Embury took stage last, stealing the show with a parade of wildlife and assistants who walked the animals through the crowd, giving donors new appreciation for the wonders of nature. Embury said San Diego is the most biodiverse county in America, and we're also home to more endangered species than any other U.S. county. She talked about the impact that the drought is having locally and the importance of the San Diego River Corridor. Embry also spoke about the native wildlife that she sees on her own ranch. And finally, Embry talked about the good works that Project Wildlife does to help rehabilitate local wildlife in need and urged everyone to do their part to protect our local wildlife.
Our topography in San Diego goes from, you know, all of our pelagic species of birds, our shorebirds, the Pacific Flyway, our intertidal zones, fish nurseries, up into our river and lowland areas, to the foothills, our mountains and deserts. So nowhere in the United States. I mean, imagine if we are able to do, as we're all working hard and planning for, reconnecting our corridors for wildlife and for water resources and natural resources. That is the San Diego River, which starts in Julian and comes down from the watershed from all of our mountains, and then the drainage goes right out to Dog Beach and Ocean Beach. Well, that's in progress right now. And it's just one of many components of maintaining why we all live in San Diego, because we love to be outdoors, we love the natural resources, and they're all right here. And we don't want to lose what we love about San Diego, and that is nature.
Embry ended her presentation by bringing out a lemur from Madagascar and talking about its endangered habitat and the habitats at risk of so many animals around the world, as well as why it's important to protect biodiversity around the world and here in San Diego.
The next animal, the star closer, is flying around her cage, as only she can do. I'll tell you a little bit about her if she comes out. She's quite young. She's new. She is a black and white rough lemur. She is from Madagascar. If you look at our planet and you say, where is the highest diversity we stand to lose and immediately under immediate stress and need, many conservation organizations have identified Madagascar as a biological hotspot. We're actually known as a biological hotspot. That is high diversity, high endemic species, intense pressure, where if we look at the planet, we could only pick, you know, five places. What are the five top places we should be spending our time and trying to protect? Well, Madagascar's lost 85% of its forest habitat. As a result of forest loss, they've lost watershed, they've had erosion issues, their rivers have silted up, they've logged and pillaged, and to the point that they're going to have to be sustained on outside resources, not their own, when they had the most amazing, magnificent resources. And it's the only place on the planet that you see lemurs. Pretty amazing animals. They have fox-like faces, long tails, which are not prehensile, but used for balance. It's her first event at night and a new stage, and she's been out working every day. So they're going to try and get her and bring her out for you, but but while you're here, behind us is the Plains Zebra, which is the Grant Zebra. He's 2 years old. His name is Zipper. He is a wild animal. He looks like a horse with stripes. He's not a horse in any way in terms of his behavior, quite unique. He barks like a dog. And they migrate with wildebeest by the thousands on the plains. Quite magnificent to see. It's the only zebra that's not endangered. All wild equines are among the most endangered animals on the planet as a group. It's quite amazing to me when we look at the horse industry, we look at the racing industry and the show industry and dressage horses and jumping horses and reining horses, that the origins of that everything that we have and we're working with are among the most seriously endangered species on the planet. So what it comes down to is all of us. So, in full circle, coming back to San Diego, Project Wildlife is the go-to group. I get calls all the time here, and I say, I am not a licensed rehabilitation facility, and I refer people to Project Wildlife. They're one of the few organizations that does pick up their phone, that does respond to the public, and that does try to mitigate the growing pressures to wildlife. So we need to continue to support all of those efforts, because behind the small staff are hundreds of volunteers donating all of their time to stay up nights and work 7 days a week or whatever it takes to feed those animals every few hours, to treat them, to rehabilitate them, and get them back out whenever possible to where they came from. If we can get the lemur out, here she comes. You got to admit, they're pretty spectacular creatures. She loves, her favorite thing is to play in the ivy. They literally fly through the trees. If you were to see one wet or without hair, they're skeletal looking, and they only, the hair makes them look bigger. Look at that tail. That tail's used for balance. And so soft, so tactile. There she goes. You can't get her on the stage, and now you can't get her off the stage, right? There she goes. She can go down. Huh? She's a character. Yeah. What do you have? Oh, somebody's glasses. So if you turn around, because you're going to take her over to the ivy and show how she plays, and she literally flings herself at the ivy. Take her to the tree right there because there's lights. But because she's new, we don't have this really, really long leash to let her like climb trees and go crazy. Because, you know, the last thing we need is a lemur flying to the top of a 200-foot eucalyptus tree and calling the fire department. But see, look at her hop, and you can see how light she is afoot. So they literally fly through the trees. They have a loud ruckus call that will bring people, if they're in a big zoo collection like San Diego Zoo, and they hear this, they come running and they think they're going to see a huge carnivore, and they're standing there and they're looking and they can't find the big carnivore that made the big noise, and they're right in front of the lemur enclosure. Incredible. I can't imagine. I travel the world and I have and enjoyed wildlife in their natural habitats, and just the thought of losing some of these incredible creatures is just beyond imagination. It really is, because they're so, so special. And they're so highly adaptive to their environments that we would never thrive in, that we would never survive. We're so used to our air conditioning and our heating and our gas and our electric and our cars. But these animals, they are highly specialized. But we just can't go changing everything about their world. They can't evolve that quickly to adjust. So they don't have air conditioning and heat and cars to move elsewhere. So we need those corridors for our wildlife. And man, if you're a wildlife lover and you live in the U.S., it doesn't get much better than San Diego. Have you been out to see the blue whales? Have you seen the gray whales? Did you see the sardines when they came in a huge big ball across the La Jolla coast? Have you seen the leopard sharks? Somebody saw a bald eagle at Ramona. I mean, golden eagles. My goodness, we just have it all here in San Diego. If you look hard enough, you can find wildlife everywhere. All right. Thank you all very much. Thanks for coming out.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County features some major events this weekend, including Oktoberfest, a major music festival and street fair, a fiesta, a parade, plus concerts by the Eagles and a Barbra Streisand tribute artist.
Plus, we'll have previews of some delicious events coming up soon, including Julian Apple Days, the East County Vintners Harvest Days, a Pumpkin Festival, and Hakumba Hot Springs Centennial Celebration.
We'll have all of these events and more, so stay tuned for another edition of East County Magazine's Destination East County.
You're invited to come and enjoy authentic German food such as bratwurst, ox on the spit, potato pancakes, sauerkraut, red cabbage, pretzels, and Bavarian pastries, all at the German-American Club's annual Oktoberfest in El Cajon. The festivities take place on 2 weekends, September 26th through 28th and October 3rd through 5th. You'll also find plenty of German beers as well as entertainment by the Gugebachband all the way from Baden-Württemberg, Germany. These talented musicians dress in traditional clothes and play a variety of German music, just as you would hear in the beer gardens in Bavaria. Feel free to dance and sing along with the chicken dance, polkas, and oompa-pa music. You can also watch traditional folk dancing performances, compete in games and contests, Check out vendors and craft booths and treat your kids to their own kids zone. For more information, visit the GermanClubSanDiego.org website at GermanClubSanDiego.org.
Over 100 different musical acts on 8 stages are slated for this year's Adams Avenue Street Fair on Saturday and Sunday, September 27th and 28th. This event is one of the largest free music street fairs in California, with more than 100 musical acts slated. The Adams Avenue Street Fair helps spotlight local, regional, national, and international talent. The event also includes carnival rides, food and craft vendors, and 4 beer gardens. For a full lineup of concerts, visit AdamsAvenueBusiness.com.
Spring Valley will host its celebration of Hispanic Heritage Month on September 27th with the 9th annual Spring Valley Fiesta. The event is free and features entertainment, refreshments, inflatable children's jumper, video game truck, face painting, and community information booths. The lineup of entertainers includes Danza Azteca, Ballet Folklorica, La Prensa Middle School Jazz Band, DJ Lowrider Cars, and much more. The fiesta will be held at the Spring Valley Library.
From Vegas to Atlantic City, Barbra Streisand impersonator Sharon Owens has performed her tribute to Barbra Streisand. The show takes stage locally on September 28th at 2 p.m. at the Poway Center for the Performing Arts. Also on stage will be the Coastal Cities Jazz Band, a 17-piece big band. Its members include Chris Klitsch, a well-known East County jazz musician and Grossmont College music professor. For tickets and details, visit PowayCenter.com.
September 28th is Viejas Days in Alpine, complete with a parade. The parade rolls out at 2 p.m. down Alpine Boulevard to the Alpine Creek Town Center, complete with floats, bands, and plenty of family fun.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Hakumba Hot Springs will celebrate its centennial on October 4th. The town's festival will feature the Alpine Outlaws, recognized for their authentic Western shootout skits, as well as craft and food vendors, children's bounce houses, live music, raffles, a pumpkin patch, a swap meet, tour of the Chinese castle, and more. The festival is also the ending point for the Passport Through Time Classic Car Caravan, sponsored by the Old Highway 80 Corporation, which will arrive in Hakumba around noon Saturday. The centennial celebration will be held in Hakumba's Community Park on Old Highway 80 in the heart of historic Hakumba Hot Springs. Visit HakumbaHotSpringsCentennial.org and click the Fall Festival tabs for details.
The Eagles, one of the world's best-selling bands of all time, will be performing at the Viejas Arena at San Diego State University on October 4th. The band sold over 150 million records, including such hits as Hotel California, Lion Eyes, Ticket to the Limit, Desperado, and Tequila Sunrise. The band disbanded but has reunited for this History of the Eagles tour. The San Diego performance on October 4th will be held at 8 p.m. Tickets are still available at Viejas Arena or through Ticketmaster.
The La Mesa Oktoberfest is one of East County's biggest street festivals, drawing 200,000 people every year. This year's Oktoberfest will be held October 3rd through 5th in the heart of La Mesa's downtown village in La Mesa Boulevard between 4th Avenue and Acadia. The event, sponsored by the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce and the La Mesa Village Merchants Association, began as a small street fair over 35 years ago. Now the three-day bash features over 250 vendors, food including German bratwurst and a beer garden, kids' activities and entertainment ranging from German music to classic rock and roll. For hours and details on each day's activities, visit LaMesaChamber.net.
As part of Julian's popular Apple Day celebration, a two-day Apple Days festival will be held October 4th and 5th at the Mangini Winery in Julian, featuring apple displays, music and dancing, an antique tractor display, children's games and activities, gold panning demonstrations, a beer and wine garden, food and merchandise vendors, contests, and, of course, apple pie. The event runs from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. both Saturday and Sunday. Visit, for more details, julianmerchants.org.
Basenut Farm in Valley Center is famed for its giant pumpkins, some weighing 100 pounds or more. Though there are plenty of smaller jack-o'-lanterns in the field as well. On October 4th and 5th, Bates Nut Farm hosts a pumpkin festival from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., complete with a straw bale maze, tractor hay rides, pony rides, and an arts and crafts fair featuring works by over 80 artisans ranging from candles and woodworking to jewelry. You'll also find food and live entertainment from 12 to 3 p.m. Admission and parking are free. For directions and details, check batesnutfarm.biz.
You're invited to join the East County Vintners Wine Group for its second annual Mountain Empire Country Harvest Celebration on Saturday, October 11th from 12 noon to sundown. The festivities take place at the Jim and Janet Wright Ranch and Vineyard in scenic Potrero. The festivities also include a smoky barbecue with all the trimmings, wine samplings by local vineyards and wineries, plus a silent auction and door prizes. RSVPs and tickets are required. For tickets and reservations, contact countryharvest2014@gmail.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in our calendar and in our festival and events sections online at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County Show on KNSJ, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
See you around East County.
This is Janice Russell with East County Magazine, here to talk about National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day. Saturday, September 27th is National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day. If you are looking to get rid of unwanted and expired prescription drugs, the San Diego County Sheriff's Department will collect and dispose of these medicines during the Drug Enforcement Agency's 9th National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day. On Saturday, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., sheriff's deputies will be on hand to collect medications that you can drop off at the following locations in East County: sheriff's substations in Alpine and Lemon Grove, the McGrath Family YMCA in Rancho San Diego, Albertson's parking lot in Ramona, and Walgreens drugstore parking lots in Lakeside and Santee.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show: Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.